So, Tracy, you mentioned as we were getting started, and you and Jerry were talking, I need to hear a little bit more about this, but you mentioned this concept of living your life this year, or maybe you did it prior, but living your life in these sprints, and you've been through three already, which the math is mathing. It's March, it's end of March.
Well,
How
so
does
I'm
this
just
work?
getting into I'm getting into the third sprint now. So this is my so Monday started the third sprint of the year. I have been developing software since the late 1900s too. Like I wrote my first website in 95. I've been married to a brilliant software developer and developing software products for years and years and years. And up until this year, like I would just slog, right? And you would go through these periods of slog. Because there's sameness to life, and there's nothing that annoys me more than sameness. And so we just started talking about it. I was like, what if we just started doing sprints, right? And looking at how our life works. And they're usually based around some sort of milestone or travel.
Yeah.
And so sprint one was January, because January is literally the longest month of the year. Like January is forever. And then there was like 6 weeks leading up to spring break, which was sprint two. And now that I'm post spring break, I think we have a 8 week sprint to my son graduating college or graduating high school. He's not that old. But yeah, so next sprint is to graduation, end of May.
I love that. And is that, I mean, how does that work at home? Is the whole family on the sprint? Is it, do
Yeah.
you, yeah.
Yeah, and we have things that have to be done in the sprint. It's just like a tech development sprint. Like there's user experience pieces. There's a lot of different components to the Parsons family sprint, the pod sprint, as we're called. And we all know what we're doing, and we all know what our actions are, and we all know what we're supposed to be getting towards. And then there's checkpoints and.
Tracy, every time I talk to you, every time it's more than 5 minutes I talk to you, I think, why aren't you a TV show? Like I just feel I can see you guys doing a huddle. It's Monday. You're doing a recap. You're talking about the feedback loop, and the kid says, I'm sorry, the UX in this last sprint sucked. Like we need to redeliver.
What do we need? What do we have? Look, what are our barriers? What is in everybody's way? How can you accommodate? And we talk about spinning plates all the time, like everybody in my house has a lot of plates that they're spinning at any given time. And
Yeah.
when a plate is about to fall, we're like, hey, does anybody want to pick spinning up this plate? And if it's nobody picks it up, then it's not an important plate. It falls on the ground and we're fine with that.
Think it's fine. You're just swiping left on the stuff that nobody cares about.
Right. We don't, we're, this is clearly not important that somebody's not picking up the plate.
Makes sense.
Have morning meeting. We have morning stand-ups. Actually, there are we walk our dog a few miles every morning. A kid goes off to school. We have morning meeting on a walk with the dog. It's very, very odd in our house. So maybe it should be a TV show. I don't know.
I would watch it. At least the I would at least watch the pilot.
We can go out and go play with the horses. It's a whole thing.
Is a whole
I
thing.
think
All
I
right.
will.
Well, we are we ready to jump into our topic?
We might as well.
Okay, here we go.
Welcome to the CXR Channel, our premier podcast for talent acquisition and talent management. Listen in as the CXR community discusses a wide range of topics focused on attracting, engaging, and retaining the best talent. We're glad you're here.
All right, welcome everybody to Recruiting Community Podcast. This is weekly insights and updates. We do this in the form of a conversation. It's not terribly formal. I am your host today, Rick Sanchez, and together with Morty Smith. Morty, how are you?
Hey, Rick. Good to see
Rick and Morty? Yeah, no?
No.
Little too pop culture. Like we're like, yeah, right? We're here. We're gonna explore uncharted territories and challenge the
I
norms
like
within the
that.
talent acquisition
That's good.
industry. Who better a pair to take on engaging topics like today?
You got it.
Rick and Morty, look it up. You'll like the show, Jerry. You might like it.
I'm sure.
All right, look, when we saw a LinkedIn post from Tracy Parsons, who's the co-founder of Flockity, I think also co-founder of WorkDrive. She's been doing this a little while, and we just love her. We knew we'd want to talk to her about it. I reached out immediately. Her take, as you probably saw in the overview, unless you're just a faithful listener and you jump on the treadmill and fire us up, there should be lemon laws in recruiting, right? Her take is that a lot of EVPs are not necessarily honest. aren't necessarily differentiated, and just no consequences for that kind of activity. So just why aren't there lemon laws for work? So we're going to talk about it. We think that's a fun topic. Few housekeeping items. First, we are streaming on the YouTube, the Facebook, and the LinkedIn. I think we are moving over soon to stream on Instagram, Twitch, and TikTok. We talked a little bit about that. And we're just waiting on Blue Sky to get their act together so we can stream over there too. We're excited about it. But you can also check out cxr.work/podcast. You can see past and future episodes. You can find those there. If you're on LinkedIn with us today, however, chime in, say hello, drop a note in the chat that is there as we stream live on LinkedIn. If you've got questions for Tracy today or for Jerry or myself, just drop them in there. We're happy to throw those up on the screen and address them. As a reminder, this is an ad-free labor of love that we do. We're at 400 plus episodes, but we do have a little bit of housekeeping. We want to share an update with you regarding the CXR Foundation. That is a 501c3 nonprofit that was formed. I think we must be going in our fourth year now, which is crazy to me. We raised just last year alone just about $34,000. All of that money goes into all of the programs. No board members are paid. Nobody gets compensated. There's no quid pro quo. And that powers things like the program, the History of Recruiting, the Diversity Suppliers program that we're working on, the TA Talk Tank Matching, and then, of course, the two big scholarships that we do, CXR Inspire, and then, of course, the Russ Mountain Scholarship, which was new this last year. We're excited about. Jerry, I don't know, you want to chime anything on Foundation?
I just think that, you know, the approach to where, and I love the fact that you point out conflict of interest issues, like nobody gets paid for this. But we work with our members really to make all of these choices and decisions, so that when we're looking at who is going to benefit by the scholarships, need, it's diversity, and it's we want a loose cannon in our industry to help move things forward. So I think we've done really well.
We've thoughtfully selected our windmills, if you will, to push towards. And by the way, we've got a board seat that is open. So if anybody is interested in perhaps serving on that board and they want to learn a little bit more about it, you can reach out to Jerry or myself. You can head to the website. It's just cxr.foundation. That is a domain, www.cxr.foundation. You can check that out. And then if you're interested in donating, to help with the projects and the initiatives that go on and help kind of power that, you're going to see this QR code. We're going to leave it up all year. It's going to be in the corner here of the podcast, so you can do that as well. So reach out to us, head to the website, use the QR code. There you go. Easy peasy, right?
Cool.
All right. With all of that, we're going to welcome in our guest today. Let's see if we can bring her in from the green room. And let's put her up here. There we go. Much better. Tracy, how are you?
Speaking of loose cannons.
Indeed. Tracy, for those who have not had the pleasure to spend a little time with you, why don't you give us kind of an escalator pitch? Who is Tracy Parsons? What's she been doing since the late 1900s? Your phrase, not mine, in this space. Talk a little bit about yourself so folks have a little perspective and context as we jump into our topic today.
Absolutely. So the very first banner out on the internet for recruiting in the late 1900s, I placed that. So I've been doing this work for years and years and years. I started in the consumer marketing space. I found my passion around helping sell life, sell jobs, grandchild of immigrants, child of a factory worker. Like this is my passion point, creating a more egalitarian relationship between employers and employees. So, you know, recruitment marketing, employer brand, candidate experience, that is the work that I've been doing for the last 20 plus years. And it's why I get out of bed every morning to try and figure out how to make this more fair.
Well, you're a gem. I did not know the fun fact of the first banner ad for jobs.
Yep.
We need to get
97 ZDNet. It was on ZDNet. I had to teach the creative team how to make an animated GIF because I knew how to make an animated GIF because I've been software developer as well. It's in helping companies get involved in social media as early as MySpace.
Wow. When Tom was still around. Yeah.
When the company's first friend was Tom.
Tom. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Was your banner ad? What? Oh, am I going to get this right? 168x46 or some odd. Do you remember the pixel for all the banner ads were just these really weird Yeah, these weird rectangles.
140 yep. long characters and 8 lines deep.
Yes. Yes.
Crazy.
We were pulling people out of Usenet groups. Like it was.
I remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I heard in it totally unrelated. I literally just heard the founder story for Slack. If you don't know the history of Slack, it was originally a failed video game, browser-based video game. I just heard, if you don't know, okay. I know it's a, yeah, sidebar. Go check it out, founding story. It's really quite entertaining to learn how they actually pivoted to be the successful organization they are today. But it started.
I mean, that is a pivot.
Internet relay chat, like it started in these chat, or like using that tool. It's really kind of fascinating.
Love it.
I will
completely like hay squirrel. Yeah, big hay squirrel moment. Okay, look, Tracy. You mentioned the idea of lemon laws in recruiting. Can you kind of explain for our listeners what you meant by that? And let's have a real conversation about a fun topic. Like how would you see this sort of applying within our talent acquisition space?
So I got to unwind this for 1 second because okay. I am the lucky person that has had 2 cars that were lemons. Nobody, I should never have cars. They don't work for me. I've had a number of blown engines, but I've had 2 official lemon buybacks. Like, so I'm very versed in the lemon law.
Okay. Lemon sadly. Expert.
Sadly. So, I was also sadly the person who joined a company and had a perfect candidate experience. And I know, like this is the thing that I do. And this was back in, I want to say 2007, 2008. And it was an easy application. It was a very clear job description. All of the interviews were great. All of the people I talked to, like I was treated so well. Everybody was on point. Everybody knew the company that I was joining and was explaining the company to me in great detail. I was asking all the right questions because again, this is the thing that I do. And I was so excited, moved my whole pod from the West Coast to Central Ohio. And I got to work there and I left within 9 months because everything that was told to me in the candidate experience was not the case. Okay. Like this is, I absolutely got bait and switched and I knew what to ask, right? Like I knew what to ask. I knew the questions. I knew what I was looking for. I'm a self-possessed leader. I know what I'm doing. I know what works for me and what doesn't. And I asked all of those questions and all of those questions were so gracefully answered and I believed them and I got there and that was not what I had accepted. The job was completely different. The team was completely different. Everything that I was doing was not as marketed. So fast forward a number of years when I have 2 lemon cars and I'm like, wait a second. This was a lemon. This job that I took was a lemon, right? It was marketed to me as this wonderful vehicle that's going to get my career from point A to point B. And it wasn't. And so I was like, why isn't there a lemon law in recruiting? Like if I could prove that this organization set me up, bait and switched me, did not deliver what they said they were going to deliver, they should owe me a year's worth of salary.
That's quite the penalty.
I mean, I want my money back, right? So if I have a lemon car, I get my money back. If I have a lemon job, they should have to pay me out for a year. Now, this is, again, is it executable? How would it work? Don't totally know. But I'm just telling you that when I put this out there in the universe, the number of people that wrote me missives of their bait and switches was astronomical. And they all had receipts. Like they all had proof. They all had the job description. They all had what they were logging their hours against. They could show me that it wasn't the job that they were sold or the culture that they were sold. And yet there is zero penalty for this.
Well, I think the interesting part here too is like you're an expert in this space. You knew what to look for and you still kind of got that. You still got that bait and switch thrown at you. So mm-hmm. My question, I guess, would be, Let's say we're in that perfect world where Tracy is the ruler of the planet.
I don't want that pressure.
It's temporary. it's an interim. You're the interim ruler of the planet.
Oh, okay, cool.
How do we implement a lemon law in the recruiting process? Like what mechanisms, what safeguard would you like to be put in place to protect yourself or to protect other candidates from an EVP that is off the rails or so misaligned or completely fabricated to the real experience, the real organization?
Yeah. So I think that we need to come up with some sort of governance around the developments of EVP. Right. So again, I've developed EVPs for a lot of companies in the history of my existence. And here's what happens. There is all this amazing good intent, right? So your TA leader and your recruitment marketing person, your employer brand person, they really want to tell the right story. And where I run into the problem is it's not who's determining right. So as soon as like we want to tell the right story is said to me, I was like, I need you to back up. I need you to either eliminate the word right or really define what right means to your organization. Okay. So it's an EVP is now developed in, we start in good faith. We go and do all the research. Now, what I always make my customers do is if you send me 10 people that are just reading from the hymnal to do my research with, we're going to be leaving the project. I want to hear what is not awesome. And I will ask questions about what is not awesome because you remain in this organization, even though there are components of not awesome, because it works for you. Right.
So,
and then go ahead, Chris. Sorry.
No. I was just going to ask you. So those of us who have been on EVP projects, who have implemented a brand built from scratch and been part of that, know that the right way to do it, and we'll sing it all day long, is to do your homework up front.
Yeah.
And do that research up front. So, Tracy, are you thinking that, and I'm sure it's not just the organization you were at, I know this is rampant, but do you think that the desire for a lemon law is the result of organizations just whipping up an EVP or whipping up that promise without doing their homework internally to what that brand really is, what that culture really is? They've just got this ideation of this would make us look like an employer of choice, and there's just nothing supporting it, and they run with it. Is that what's happening, or do you think it's a little more insidious than that?
I would not say insidious.
It's a big word.
It's a great word. We start with good intent, okay? And then the more things that we get into our research that tell us where the holes are in the culture that we should be telling candidates about and addressing internally as the organization, that's when layers up in the organization get involved and say, no, here's some gravel, fill that hole in. Okay, we don't want to talk about the hole, or that hole is not aligned with the vision that I have for the organization. And there is, and again, that's why there are three components to a brand. There's this aspirational piece of the EVP, there's this reality piece of the EVP, and then there's this external perception element of the EVP. And almost all Lemon Law qualified EVPs are solely in that aspirational component.
I'm not going to argue with her at all. You know, I keep on saying to candidates that one of the things they should be asking, but they never do, is how many people that look like me have you hired in the last 5 years and where are they now? Those are the kinds of things that are not going to be discussed very often within the framework of your journey to the job.
And I think here's one of the things that I would really like to see happen. Anything that we ask of a candidate during this experience should also be fair game for the candidate to ask us. So if we are doing reference checks on a candidate, you should be supplying your candidates with a list of references within the organization that they can check with.
I'm good. They can use the same tools that you use reversed.
Great.
So we've recently come across folks who are talking about being part of a task force to determine whether or not they should restrict candidates from the use of AI. And I'm going, wait a second, are you restricting yourself from the use of AI?
Correct.
But it's no different than any other element of that employer-employee relationship, right? Like you are expected to give, you know, 4 to 6 weeks notice at a particular level, but we're going to let you go today. Like there are countless instances where that balance of power, and Jerry, the one you mentioned, I just love because it's starting to level a little bit in that space, right? The technology becoming available to the candidates.
Right.
But I'll be the counterbalance here for both of you tilting at that windmill. I just don't think that's ever going to happen.
Yeah. Well, let's say that it doesn't, which is why I am advocating for a limit. Like there needs to be some sort of penalty for you, because let me just walk down this path just a little bit further.
Yeah.
I left this job after 9 months, right? I left a job after 9 months. Do you know what I was considered? A job hopper. Do you know what that looks like for me? Bad. And it's all because they created an experience that wasn't true. So now my reputation has taken a hit as a job hopper, where their reputation is fine. They're still paying for their best place to work icons on their website. And I am now labeled a less than. It's unfair.
So
Jerry, I mean, I'm not sure I made Jerry.
You can't argue.
Well, I'll bet there were new questions that you decided you were going to ask in the future in a whole new way. So I will bet there's some really cool learning on your part that says, how will I avoid this in the future? And maybe not to the same degree that you were faced with, but I see that in the maturity factor of kids from their 20s when they first get a job to when they're in their 40s asking much more meaty, if you will, questions about the viability of that company, the development capabilities, how the budget is formed in relation to those things that they wouldn't have asked many, many years before.
Oh, companies do not like interviewing me, based on all the things that I learned.
Well, okay. So, that's my next question for you, Tracy. And to Jerry's point, I think it leads right into that is, look, you were an expert when you went in, you still got bamboozled.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So then now it's next tier. It's, you got to elevate that game of your expertise and lesson learned. What would you tell folks who are in transition now or who might be interviewing? Like, are there red flags they should look out for? Do they just need their own set of really raucous questions and lean all in fearless? Like what would you do if you were doing it again with that organization?
So I will say there are a couple red flags when you're interviewing. If there's no time left for you to ask questions, you're done. You're not continuing. No matter how much you need or want this job, you're done. Because that's a disrespect of my time. Look, this is a symbiotic relationship and it is not treated like a symbiotic relationship. And that is really my rub. I need people to come work with my organization to help my organization grow and thrive and build and do things. And I want people to come work with my organization so that they can build an amazing career and a new set of skills and achieve things that they didn't think was possible. Like this is a symbiosis and we do not treat it this way. And I would like to blame it on whoever coined the phrase war for talent. I don't like them. If you know who that is, I would really like for you guys to connect me with them.
Josh Burson. Is it Josh?
Who
is it?
No. Goes way back to the 90s. And
yeah. Who was that? We should.
It was an organization. Right, it was one of the big consulting outfits.
Like a Deloitte or?
Not Deloitte, but it was like not Towers Perrin. I'll come up with it. And they wrote a book. They ended up, four of them wrote a book called The War for Talent. And which was called The War for Talent. And they described, I'm trying to think of the names of the companies they described as the winners of the war for talent. And the top five all went down within 3 to 5 years. And most of their presidents went to jail. Just saying.
So they're the prisoners of war for talent.
Yeah.
Well, so that has rankled my feathers since the 90s, because candidates don't want war, y'all. They just want a job. They want to get paid and do something fulfilling. It's a really great branding. It's a really great advertising. It's a really great phrase for selling products, but it created this mess that makes it a power struggle as opposed to a symbiosis. And I am not here for it.
I just looked it up. It was McKinsey.
Okay. Oh. Well, let's let John Oliver know that one. So hopefully, John Oliver, if you're listening to this, I would love to weigh in on this topic.
Maybe he'll offer you a motor coach. For those
John Oliver fans. Bird costume, whatever it takes, John.
For those fans that are keeping up with the John Oliver show lately. Yeah. Good grief. Well, I love that. I think it's fascinating. I think it is a hell of a reminder because you come in, you got that expertise, but it's a hell of a reminder for our branding and our EB folks and the marketing folks that are in the space when crafting that, like where is that message originating from? Where is that floating up from? Did you pull it out of your ass, or is there actually some work that went into figuring that out? Was there research done at every level within the organization, every tenure within the organization? Like, where did that messaging come from? Because ultimately you're creating this promise between, you know, the employer, what he will provide or she will provide, and the candidate, what he will provide or she will provide in return for that promise.
Yes. And when we treat it so much like marketing, Chris, it's lost. And then it's not differentiated, right? Like, when I spent 3 years at Smashfly, and that was the only time since my Lemon Law experience that I worked for somebody else. So Jerry, your question was, what did you learn from this? What did you learn from that? I'm like, I learned that I need to run my own thing. Like, this is, I need to create my own culture. I need to do, but I did take a break with Smashfly, and they were very clear with me. And I was very clear, like, so the questions that I was asking, the questions that I was looking at, the information that I was seeking was very direct. And they were like, yeah, this is the problem that you're going to face, and this is what we're going to do. And there's this fear. And again, going back to the openings, like, there's another thing that our family, we never make any decisions based in fear. Like, if you're afraid of something, you're doing it. Like, this is, you'll get over it. You're going to be fine. But if you're making a decision based on fear of missing out or fear of this or fear of that, it's a no. And we are making so many decisions in our industry right now based in fear. So if we tell a candidate what it's really like to work here, they won't want to work here. And I'm just going to call bullshit. Like, everywhere, not everything is for everybody. And we have to be okay with that.
Yeah. I think there's a concept of kind of sharing warts and all to a degree. Like, if will it always be a 40-hour work week? No, you'll work more.
Right.
I mean, do we always have, you know, flexible this or flexible that? No, we don't always. The work ebbs and flows. Right. Do we reward you here? Yes. Do we push you here? Yes. Like, that is a tough one. Certainly, I think maybe the more historic works that have been around a while, a little more legacy, big companies, that's a hard sell internally, because that communicates what, like weakness. That won't make us an ideal, you know, ideal prospect. Yeah.
Well, one of the things that you make me think about is we are an at-will kind of, you know, society. Yeah. So a lot of the things are there, and that goes counterintuitive to allowing them, the employee, some kind of Lemon Law, because you sign a whole bunch of things coming into an organization that give up certain rights. But what if instead we chose, and I don't want to use China as my favorite, but the fact is, China offers 1, 2, and 3 year contracts to most professional employees. And for a 1 year contract, there is 1 month in which there's no loss of face, in which either one could say, nope, this is not working. Mm-hmm. But after that, the contract is now in force. And if the company wants you to leave, they have to pay out the full contract. So if you have a 3 year contract as a professional, and after 3 months, you haven't discovered, if you will, or they haven't discovered that you don't meet the needs in terms of where we want to go, then beyond that, there is a real contract between you. It's kind of interesting.
It's not, yeah, Andrea, it's not unlike, we've been talking to countless leaders, Tracy, in the last year or so, who were caught up in, you know, that shift, right? Where the organization's overhired or unexpectedly they were in transition and looking for new work. And I can't tell you how many times the leaders have started to share with us, they're beginning to negotiate short exits. Right. So that if I come in at this level and you decide for whatever reason that it is to be eliminated, not due to performance or documented performance, I get an out. Yeah. Right. That they're negotiating that short-term exit. If your poor planning is the result of me hitting the bricks again, you're going to pay out for that.
Think about fractional work and yep. on the rise, yep. contingent work on the rise. But if we look at increasing the capabilities, upskilling the capabilities of the candidate to negotiate what that is in terms of time, you know, commitment, you know, what are the outs, et cetera, obviously there's a new kind of learning. And when you think about it, a lot of the union activity at the lower level was fundamentally designed to protect those individuals who by and large are on an hourly basis.
Correct.
So maybe there are some trends, if you will, that might be the equivalent of a lemon law, or at least dealing with that downstream. So I think I have a little more optimism than I had at the beginning of this conversation.
I think candidates are a little savvier.
Yes.
I think certainly in our industry, they've been put through the ringer. Like I said, we talked to countless leaders who were in the middle of this transition period who said, I am rethinking the candidate experience entirely after these last 6 months or this last year. So yes. I think we're turning this corner of thinking differently about the entire recruiting process and how candidates are treated. And I think it is a little bigger than just candidate experience, but man, it's kind of like Titanic's a bad example, but turning a really big ship, it takes an awfully long time to get that wheel around and get that ship turned right around.
It does. But what I heard all of us say is that there is a need for more truth in advertising, more honesty, better prepping in people better. And we're starting to see incremental changes, right? So like, I love when people ask me, they're like, well, what should we do? I'm like, I don't know what we should do. I've got a bunch of businesses I'm running. But like, let's have smarter people than me figure that out. And any incremental step we can get to creating more symbiosis and more of an egalitarian relationship is a win for me. Like that is truly, look, as I mentioned, my grandparents came over here and they worked in coal mines. My dad worked in a factory. He was a union member. Now I get to run software companies, right? So like there is the opportunity to continue and grow, but all of our experience and all the things that everybody in this landscape of human work has been through in the last 12 to 5 years, 4 years, 3 years, the last 12 years has been nothing but upheaval and all kinds of chaos. And I think it's just making us a little bit smarter. And I think it's making us hopefully a little more empathetic.
I like that. Look, Tracy, we ask all our guests before they leave the show, if you were going to write a book about this topic, what would the title of that book be?
Did you send me this? Okay. So if I was to write a book,
I do not send this question to anybody.
Okay. Damn it. If I was to write a book about this topic, get the fuck out of your own way.
Okay.
I like it.
So look, we've all had terrible experiences as candidates and employees. We have all felt at some point in time, bait and switch. I mean, there's the whole joke about, you know, 90% of my job is other duties as assigned. We've all started at a place thinking that we ordered fish tacos and then find a raisin in the tacos. And we're like, what's happening here? Like, this is not something that everybody in listening here does not have experience with. But it is something that we all can take all of that experience.
He's still choking on the raisin. That.
I'm just
the
subtitle. It's get the fuck out of your own way, but the subtitle is don't be the raisin in the taco. I'm crying.
Because then you know what happens. You see that one raisin, you're like, is this thematic or is this a one-off?
Yeah. Okay. So Tracy, present company excluded. Who gets a copy of your raisin book? Who gets a first signed copy?
John Oliver.
Oh, of course. National treasure, that guy.
I'm just saying.
Oh my God, I love it. Look, Tracy, I want to say thank you so much. I know you're super, super busy woman. We really appreciate you coming and making the time for us. It was great to see you at Talent at Live recently, and good to catch up. And I'm looking forward to seeing you. We got some upcoming conferences. We're hitting conference season, so it's going to be great to see you. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Everybody else who's still dialed in and wrapping up your jog, cxr.org/podcast. You can listen to this episode and, of course, future episodes. You can see what's coming up and all of the past episodes. Don't go too far back, though, but there's 400 some odd episodes in there. But stick with the current stuff. We're a little happier with the current stuff. But check us out then. We'll see everybody else next week. Say goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening to the CXR channel. Please subscribe to CXR on your favorite podcast resource and leave us a review while you're at it. Learn more about CXR at our website, cxr.works, facebook.com and twitter.com/careercrossroads, and on Instagram @careerxroads. We'll catch you next time.